The opinions expressed on this program do not reflect the views and opinions of Audio Journal, its board of directors, staff, or volunteer readers. Thank you for listening to Audio Journal.
Hello and welcome to Audio Journal's Mindful Moments program. You'll hear articles from Spirit of Change magazine. I'm Jillian, and for the next half hour, we'll explore you don't need an extreme regimen, just these tiny tweaks can improve sleep, movement, and diet. Why you can't eat just one, it's the processing, not the ingredients. And better health through bra-free living. We'll begin with, you don't need an extreme regimen, just these tiny tweaks can improve sleep, movement, and diet. You probably already know you should move more, sleep better, and eat cleaner. But the gap between knowing and doing feels enormous. Two large studies show that the gap is much more smaller than you think. The first published in The Lancet, and drawing on wearable device data from more than 135,000 adults, found that remarkably small increases in daily movement and modest reduction in sitting were associated with meaningful drops in mortality. The second, published in eClinical Medicine and Tracking, 59,078 UK Biobank participants went further by measuring what happens when you combine tiny upgrades across sleep, physical activity, and diet simultaneously. The combined approach proved far more powerful than improving any single habit alone. Cardiovascular disease, type 2 diabetes, and dementia continue to shorten both lifespan and health span for millions. These conditions don't appear overnight. They build through years of accumulated metabolic stress, stress that even small daily habits either feed or reverse. The takeaway from both studies is the same. You don't need an extreme regimen. You need micro improvements that stack small daily deposits into a health account that compounds over years. 5 minutes that shift survival odds. For the Lancet study, researchers examined data from adults across Norway, Sweden, the US, and the UK Biobank. Instead of relying on memory-based questionnaires, they used wearable devices to measure real movement and sitting time. They then modeled a small, simple question. How many deaths could be prevented if people moved just 5 to 10 more minutes per day or sat 30 to 60 minutes less? This isn't about marathon training. It's about realistic, bite-sized changes that fit into your current routine. Participants were followed for about 8 years on average. Just 5 extra minutes of brisk movement per day was linked to preventing up to 1 in 10 deaths among most adults, and about 1 in 17 among even the least active. Cutting sedentary time by 30 minutes per day was associated with preventing about 7% of deaths in most adults and about 3% in most sedentary group. That means small shifts across a population translate into thousands of lives. Tiny combined upgrades unlock extra years. For the eClinical Medicine study, researchers set out to determine the minimum combined improvements in sleep, physical activity, and nutrition linked to longer lifespan and health span. Participants wore accelerometers to measure sleep and moderate to vigorous physical activity, while diet quality was scored using a 0 to 100 diet quality score based on intake of vegetables, fruits, grains, meat, fish, dairy, oils, and sugary drinks. Researchers essentially asked, what's the smallest realistic change that still adds measurable years? Surprisingly, small combined shifts were linked to 1 extra year of life, an additional 5 minutes of sleep per day, 1.9 minutes of moderate to vigorous activity per day, and a 5-point increase in diet quality score were associated with one additional year of lifespan. Here is how you take control. 1. Add 5 intentional minutes of brisk movement every day. If you're mostly sedentary, start with 5 extra minutes of moderate movement, such as walking daily. That means walking fast enough that talking feels slightly harder. Set a timer and treat it like a non-negotiable appointment. If you're already active, add another 5 minutes to your current routine. Track your streak on a calendar and work your way up to a 1-hour walk daily. 2. Cut 30 minutes of sitting by breaking it into micro bursts. If you sit for work, stand up every hour and move for 3 minutes. March in place. Climb stairs. Walk the hallway. 6 short breaks equals 18 minutes. Add a brief evening walk and you cross 30 minutes. Your muscles act like metabolic engines when they contract. Frequent activation resets your physiology throughout the day. 3. Prioritize high-quality sleep. If you're not sleeping enough, extend your time in bed by 5 to 15 minutes this week. Darken your room. Remove screens at least 60 minutes before bed. Wake at the same time daily, even on the weekends. If you sleep more than 9 hours and still feel exhausted, tighten your schedule and prioritize morning light exposure. Your brain and metabolism stabilize when sleep timing stabilizes. 4. Upgrade your diet with one measurable change at a time. Add 1/2 a serving of vegetables to one meal daily. Replace one processed snack with whole fruit. Swap vegetable oils for grass-fed butter, ghee, or tallow. You're not chasing perfection. You're raising your daily average. 5. Layer the 3 habits together instead of overhauling one. If you try to double your exercise while ignoring sleep and food, you stall. Instead, combine small changes across all 3 areas. Add 5 minutes of sleep, 2 minutes of brisk movement, and 1 food upgrade in the same week. That coordination drives the strongest gains in lifespan and years free of disease. You build momentum through repetition. If you're overwhelmed, focus on one micro target in each category this week. Your body responds to steady signals. Stack them daily, and the trajectory of your life shifts in your favor. The next article, Why You Can't Eat Just One, it's the processing, not the ingredients. I spend a great deal of my time researching the science of nutrition and metabolism, but some of the most powerful lessons come from personal experience in the kitchen. Recently, I set out to make the healthiest possible chip, a rice and sweet potato cracker, baked in coconut oil with nothing but salt added. We spent hours perfecting the recipe, rolling the dough thin enough, adjusting bake times, getting the salt level right. They were thin, crispy, and genuinely delicious. The ingredients could not have been cleaner. Organic rice flour, sweet potato, coconut oil, and salt. No seed oils. The linoleic acid content came in at roughly 1%. No MSG, no flavor enhancer, no artificial anything. Baked, not fried. By any conventional measure, these were about as healthy as a snack can get. And yet, I could eat the entire batch in one sitting without blinking. They were addictive in the truest sense of the word. The same compulsion hand-to-mouth behavior you see with Doritos or Lay's, this troubled me. Because I had the same experience with dehydrated zucchini chips, a pure vegetable sliced thin and dried. Even with nothing added, they were irresistibly easy to overconsume. Meanwhile, if you put a whole baked potato or a bowl of watermelon in front of me, I eat a reasonable amount and stop. The satiety signals work. My body tells me when it's had enough. But with the chips, that signal never comes, or it comes far too late. This personal observation sent me down a research rabbit hole. What I found had fundamentally changed how I think about processed food and may change how you stock your kitchen. The implications go far beyond just chips. Over 500 additional calories per day eating ultra-processed foods. Most conversations about processed food focus on what's been added: sugar, salt, seed oils, artificial flavors, preservatives. And those are legitimate concerns. But my chip experiment reveals something more fundamental: the physical transformation of whole food into a processed format is itself sufficient to create compulsive overconsumption, even when the ingredients are impeccable. A landmark study in 2019 at the National Institute of Health, NIH, conducted a trial crystallizing these results. For the study published in Cell Metabolism, researchers admitted 20 adults in the NIH Clinical Center and randomized them to receive either ultra-processed or unprocessed diets for 2 weeks, immediately followed by the alternate diet. Here's the key detail. The meals were matched for presented calories, energy density, macronutrients, sugar, sodium, and fiber. The results were striking. Participants consumed about 508 additional calories per day on the ultra-processed diet, gained weight during that period, and lost weight during the unprocessed diet period. The foods were naturally equivalent on paper. What differed was the physical form and degree of processing. While this study compared entire diet patterns rather than individual food textures, it established the principle that processing level, independent of nutrient content, drives overconsumption. Later research pinpoints texture as a key mechanism. Why your brain can't say no to the crunch. When a chip shatters between your teeth and crunch travels through your jawbone directly to your inner ear, a miniature sonic event your brain finds deeply satisfying. There's essentially nothing in nature that provides this specific type of dry, brittle, explosive fracture. Natural crunchy foods, raw carrots, celery, apples, have a wet, fibrous crunch that requires significant jaw force. The dry chip crunch is a fundamentally different sensory event. Your brain evolved to find these textures highly rewarding. In ancestral environments, dry, calorie-dense, shelf-stable foods were rare and enormously valuable. Such foods required days of sun-drying, hand-grinding, and preparation. The sensory system that makes you seek out that crunch was an adaptive advantage. Now, the same system is being exploited by a food format that can be produced in unlimited quantities. Food texture controls how much you eat. It turns out my kitchen experiment mirrors what researchers found when they tested this formally. In a 2022 crossover study published in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition, 50 healthy weight participants were given 4 different lunch meals, varying in both texture and processing level, and allowed to eat as much as they wanted: soft, minimally processed, hard, minimally processed, soft, ultra-processed, hard, ultra-processed. The harder texture meals were consumed more slowly. They also produced roughly a 21% to 26% reduction in both food weight and energy consumed. The least energy came from the hard, minimally processed meal. about 483 kcal, and the most from the soft, ultra-processed meal, about 789 kcal. A difference of approximately 300 calories from a single meal. Softer texture and higher processing levels likely made the food easier and faster to eat. This finding has been replicated consistently. A 2024 study in the British Journal of Nutrition tested 24 different meals and found that slower texture meals consistently reduce food intake by about 22%, and a 20% decrease in eating rate producing approximately 11% decrease in energy consumed. The effect held across both meal types tested, breakfast and lunch, and across a wide variety of foods. Foods designed for rapid eating quietly increase total calorie intake. Research published in Nature Food examined 2,733 individual meals across four dietary patterns and found that energy density, eating rate, and hyperpalatability consistently predicted higher energy intake across all diets. The faster food could be consumed, the more calories people ate. Four mechanisms of the chip trap. When you dehydrate and process a whole food into a thin, crispy chip, even from the healthiest ingredients, you simultaneously trigger four mechanisms that bypass satiety. These mechanisms don't just add up, they multiply each other. Each other makes the other worse, which is why the chip format is so disproportionately effective at overriding your body's built-in controls. Number one. First, you concentrate calories by removing water. A whole sweet potato is roughly 77% water. When you eat it, your stomach fills with volume, stretch receptors fire, and satiety hormones are released. A chip made from the same sweet potato has had most of the water removed. You consume the caloric equivalent of several sweet potatoes in a fraction of the stomach volume. The stretch receptors embedded in your stomach wall, one of your body's primary, I've had enough signals, barely register the intake. Two, second, you eliminate chewing resistance. A whole sweet potato requires sustained chewing. Multiple chew cycles per bite, mixing with saliva, cautious swallowing. This slow oral processing gives you satiety, signaling time to keep pace with intake. A thin chip dissolves in 3 to 5 chews. The oral transmit time is so short that your brain's satiety cascade, the chain of hormonal signals that build fullness in stages from your gut to your brain, can't keep up with your hand-to-mouth pace. Third, you create a rapid oral dissolution. Food scientists have documented what's called the vanishing caloric density phenomenon. When a food dissolves or fractures rapidly in the mouth, the brain partially discounts the calories. The sensory system interprets rapid oral clearance as lower energy density than the food actually contains. The chips are calorie dense but sensorially light. In other words, your brain uses oral texture as a rough calorie meter. When food melts away quickly, your brain reads it as low energy, like broth or lettuce, even when it's calorically dense. It's essentially a sensory accounting error. Fourth, you create a rapid reward cycle. Each crunch generates a small dopaminergic reward signal. A small burst of dopamine, the same neurotransmitter involved in the pleasure response to sugar or social media notifications. The chip is gone in seconds, the reward fades, and your hand reaches for the next one. Compared to eating watermelon, where each bite involves cutting, picking up, biting through rind, and chewing through fibrous flesh, zucchini is about as benign a vegetable as exist, low calorie, high water content, minimal sugar. But sliced thin and dehydrated, it becomes compulsively over-edible. Fortunately, zucchini isn't particularly calorie dense even when dehydrated, so the health consequences are modest. But the behavioral pattern is identical to rice sweet potato chips. This confirms that the addiction mechanism is the physical format, not the macronutrient composition. You don't need sugar, fat, salt, or any combination, therefore, to create compulsive eating behavior. You need only remove water, remove structural integrity, and create rapid oral dissolution. Much like healthy cigarette, you can improve the ingredients, but the delivery mechanism is inherently problematic. Engineered food combinations dominate the modern U.S. food supply. Hyper-palatable foods, foods engineered with specific combinations of fat, sugar, salt, and carbohydrates that excessively activate brain reward systems, are pervasive in the U.S. food system. My experience goes further than even the hyper-palatability research suggests. My chips had none of the engineered combinations that define hyper-palatable food. They were addictive purely through their physical form, food texture and structure shape how much people consume. Researchers writing in the current nutrition reports have made the broader case that food form, texture, and matrix, not just composition, are primary determinants of energy intake and metabolic response. What this means for your kitchen. The practical takeaway is straightforward but difficult to accept. If you're trying to optimize your health, avoid the chip and cracker format entirely. Even when made from whole, organic, minimally processed ingredients at home, the effort and energy required to make them at home is itself a clue. In nature, the processing energy required to turn a sweet potato into a dehydrated cracker would have been enormous. Days of sun drying and hand grinding. That energy barrier was a natural throttle on consumption that modern kitchens have eliminated. Before eating any snack, ask yourself, does this require real chewing or does it dissolve? If it dissolves, your satiety system is essentially flying blind. Instead, eat your sweet potato whole. Try baked sweet potato wedges with the skin on. The moisture and fiber remain intact. Eat your zucchini steamed or raw. Eat your rice as cooked rice. If you crave crunch, cucumber slices with the skin on provide mechanical resistance without the calorie concentration. Keep the water in. Keep the fiber intact. Keep the structural complexity that forces your jaw to work and your satiety system to function as designed. The path to health runs through whole foods in their natural water-containing structural complex form, not through finding ever more clever ways to turn them into chips. The last article, Better Health Through Bra-Free Living. Remember when you were told tobacco was safe? Remember when you were told fast foods were healthy? Have you been told bras are good for you? Well, it seems the truth is out there, and it's something we all need to hear. The number 007 is normally connected with the thought of intelligence work and spies. Here at 007B.com, the B doesn't stand for bond, but for breasts. Our goal is to get people to use their intelligence so as not to fall prey to the typical 007 James Bond type of thinking, which is so prevalent in many countries of our world today. A 47-year-old woman who suffered from childhood sexual abuse and debilitating chronic illness in adulthood commented, "If you live long enough, you will be sick or something will be wrong with you. You'll lose a job. You'll have a serious accident. You'll get sick. You'll gain weight. How do we deal with this in a culture that worships perfection and youth?" How bras are linked to breast cancer. Many allopathic medicine advocates say that bras causing breast cancer is just a myth. It is true that bras do not cause breast cancer per se, but they are linked to its formation since they can prevent your body from excreting dangerous cancer-causing chemicals. The main reason why bras are bad for breast health is because they restrict the lymph node flow in your breasts. There are numerous lymph pathways and lymph nodes in the armpit under the breast and in between the breast. Normally, the lymph node fluid washes out waste materials and other toxins away from the breast. But bras, and especially push-up bras, inhibit this action, so toxins can start to accumulate in the breast, and that can help cancer to develop. In other words, bras inhibit the way our bodies normally cleanse themselves and get rid of cancer cells and toxins like PCBs, DDT, dioxin, benzene, and other carcinogenic chemicals that cling to the body's fatty tissues like breast. In fact, if you find a lump in your breast, it may very well be filled with lymph node fluid that was just not able to move away from the breast tissue. Bra wearing may also be connected to cancer in other ways. Wearing bras slightly increases the temperature of the breast tissue, and women who wear bras have higher levels of the hormone prolactin. Both of these may influence breast cancer formation. The first comprehensive study on this subject was done by medical researcher Sidney Singer after his wife, Soma Jismajor, discovered a lump on her breast. She got rid of hers in 2 months by quitting bra wearing, doing regular breast massage and exercise, drinking only purified water, and taking some herbs and supplemental vitamins and minerals. Singers noticed that Maoris of New Zealand integrated into white culture have the same rate of breast cancer, while the marginalized Aboriginals of Australia have practically no breast cancer. The same was true for Westernized Japanese, Fijians, and other bra-converted cultures. In the early 1990s, Singer studied 4,500 women in 5 cities across the U.S. about their habits in purchasing and wearing bras. Though his study did not take into account other lifestyle factors, the results are too striking to be denied. 3 out of 4 women who wore their bras 24 hours per day developed breast cancer. 1 out of 7 women who wore bras more than 12 hours per day but did not to bed developed breast cancer. 1 out of 152 women who wore their bras less than 12 hours per day got breast cancer. 1 out of 168 women who wore bras rarely or never acquired breast cancer. So the difference between 24-hour wearing and not at all was 125-fold. The lymphatic system in the breast only develops fully during pregnancy and breastfeeding. So women who wear bras every day and postpone having children, and those who do not breastfeed, could be at higher risk of breast cancer. Mindful Moments is a production of Audio Journal, a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network. If you would like a hard copy of our program schedule, either in large print or braille, please call 508-797-1117. Archived editions of this program are available on our website, audiojournal.org, or go to Audio Journal app on your iPhone, iPad, or Android device. I'm Jillian. Thank you for listening.
You are listening to Audio Journal, a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network.
Hello, everybody. This is Bill Ruggiero. Join me for my live weather reports, heard every weekday mornings on the Morning Report, right here on Audio Journal. Get your first forecast without waiting for a forecaster. That's the Morning Report, heard every weekday mornings from 7:30 a.m. to 8 a.m. only from Audio Journal, part of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network.